Even though high school is your whole world right now, high school isn't everything. It's a necessary stage in your life to help you develop. It's a stepping stone, but it's not everything. In fact, school isn't even one of your greatest challenges. Life is.
Welcome to Letters from the Lunchroom, a podcast by Communities and Schools of Mid-America. I'm your host, Victoria Partridge. Communities and Schools is a nationwide nonprofit which connects students and their families to local resources in order to remove barriers so that they will have greater success in school and in life. During this podcast, we talk to people who have a relationship with our organization. From students to staff members and alumni to volunteers, we know that people who connect with nonprofits have a story that led them there, and we want to know that story. Today, we are talking with Blanca Soto, who is the CIS site coordinator at Dodge City High School in Dodge City, Kansas. Blanca was born and raised in Mexico and moved with her family to Southwest Kansas during her junior year in high school, where she was an ESL, or English as a Second Language, student. And she experienced firsthand the obstacles newcomers and the Latino population face. Blanca has spent her adult life working in the nonprofit field and talks with us today about her experiences as a domestic violence, sexual assault, and immigration advocate, and of course, how those experiences led her to connect with Communities and Schools of Mid-America. Please stay tuned as we welcome Blanca Soto to the Lunchroom. Hi, and welcome to the Lunchroom, Blanca. How are you doing today?
Hi, Victoria. I'm doing pretty well.
Have you ever been on a podcast before?
No, this will be my first time.
Well, that's exciting. I love it whenever we get to have newcomers on the show. So you heard me say the intro just a little bit ago, and I talked a bit about your history working in the nonprofit field, because I know that you've worked with communities and schools, obviously, but I had no idea that you had done all of these things prior to joining communities and schools. So I do want to talk to you about your relationship with CIS, because obviously, like, that's what this podcast is about. But I really want to know, what got you interested in working with nonprofits in the first place?
So it actually started during my senior year in high school. I got to do my community service for the crisis center of Dodge City, and I was just helping them sort through donations, and I got to spend a lot of time with them, and it really impacted me just seeing the families that they were serving and just the way they handle their situations with just grace. And I moved away from my community for a couple of years, and when I came back, I started working for the school district, but it was just not, I was not enjoying it at all. And the director of the crisis center, who I had met during my community service years, offered me a position. I was 21, 22 years old at the time. I had no real good working experience. And she just took a chance on me. I loved it. I learned a lot from her. I was able to I started as a court advocate, pretty much helping our clients with protection from abuse orders. And I started going to the forensic exams at the hospital with victims of sexual assault, primarily children. I just love being a part of their healing process, just being able to be there for them and helping them come up with their own solutions. I did that job for about 4 years or so, and then I was given the opportunity within the crisis center to become a appointed by the Board of Immigration Appeals to actually do immigration work where our clients were undocumented and were victims of sexual assault or domestic violence. And that was probably my favorite job so far, was being able to give them a immigration relief that they so much needed, especially with the resources that we have in Southwest Kansas. That was a really great opportunity for me.
Well, and, you know, as I mentioned in the intro, I mean, you yourself are an immigrant. And I know that going through the immigration process in America is obviously it's a really hot topic right now.
Yeah.
But it's a very difficult thing. And so I think that that's really, it's really important that you went into that line of work to help immigrants through this really, really challenging process, having some sort of idea of what it's like. Because the immigration process, there's so many different paths that there are. And regardless of if it's documented or undocumented, there's just so many different paths, but none of them are easy.
Right.
And I think that that's really difficult for people who have never had anything to do with the immigration process to understand and empathize
Absolutely.
With. So, yeah, I think that's great that you were working with them.
It was very humbling, and it gave me a whole different kind of appreciation for my parents and the process that they have to go through. Because I think we do have this misconception that it's a really black and white process, and you know, you can get on the line and pay a couple $100 and everything is solved. And there's so many requirements and so many black areas, gray areas, that you know, it is such a complicated process, especially when we're talking about victims of domestic violence and sexual assault. There's so many other things that are on the mind that you know, that stops them from seeking help. Because they're worried about their immigration status, and you know, their voices go silent because they don't want to get in trouble. And so when there's a solution that can help them get out of the situation and be brave enough to open up and talk to someone about it without the fear of repetition, you know, it's just really awesome to be a part of that process.
Yeah. And I know that, you know, you mentioned that you work in Southwest Kansas, and I identified that you work at Dodge City High School during the intro. What is the population in the high school in regards to immigrants versus non-immigrants?
Yes. We're 76, close to 76% Latino at the high school.
Wow.
Yes. So that is, you know, not just Mexico, but we have people from a large population from Cuba and Puerto Rico and Central America, and a few from South America as well. We have a really large number. I think that what we have documented as immigrants, I think it's close to 30% as well at the high school level.
Wow. So are you able to use, I know that we don't really do a lot of immigration work in regards to CIS specific, but we do help students and their families. Do you find any of the experience that you had with being an immigrant advocate and some of the other nonprofit experiences that you had before you came to CIS, do you find those being helpful as you do your current CIS duties?
Yes, absolutely. I do get questions all the time, and now I have to be very careful since I am no longer employed with the crisis center. I am not protected under any relief. So if I do give the wrong advice, I can get in a lot of trouble.
Right.
So I do rely, I have still a few connections with attorneys in the area. Yes, definitely, just connections that I made during those years at the Crisis Center have really helped me into finding some options for my students. There's a mm-hmm. lot of things that I don't know anymore. Immigration is one of those things that changes all the time, and there's different requirements and different laws that apply. So you know, it's refreshing for me to actually having to go back and freshen up on new things happening in laws. But yeah, definitely, especially the connections made during that time has really helped me help my students now.
Yeah. And I think that you make a really good point there that just being able to connect students and their families with local resources, I mean, that's the essence of what we do. And so I know that we try really, really hard whenever we hire a new site coordinator to get somebody who's really familiar with resources that are local to the area so that we can be successful at doing just that and connecting those families who may not know of local resources with those resources. We become that bridge so that it just makes their path easier.
No, and it has really helped me. I actually, I think when I was hired by communities and schools, you know, the knowledge that I had with my previous job, not only for the crisis center, but communities are, Big Brothers, Big Sisters as well. It's just like everything came together. I knew a lot of the organizations in the community and, a lot of the, stakeholders in the community that really has allowed me to better serve my students and even deeper connections with community members.
So tell me, when was the first time that you heard about communities in schools?
So actually, my supervisor at Big Brothers Big Sisters, she had worked for communities in schools in Texas. Now I think the services that she offered within middle school were very different, especially in a different state, to the community that we have in Southwest Kansas and Dodge City in particular. But I kind of had a little bit of knowledge from what she did back then. But it wasn't probably until I actually filled out my application with communities and schools that I really understood more of the services and the goals for students.
And so now you've been working for communities and schools since 2014. You are creeping up on your fifth year, which is amazing. And one of the things that I would love to know is what are one of your, at least one, of your favorite success stories, if you can share that, but without using the student's
name. Absolutely. I have a lot of stories that I can say are my favorite. I've had really amazing students since I started working here. But there's one in particular that really has stuck with me. This specific student I have known since he was in second grade. I knew the family working at the crisis center. And somehow, when I moved to my other job at Big Brothers Big Sisters, this family kind of moved with me. And when I started working at Communities and Schools, he happened to be a freshman then, or sophomore, sorry. And so he was just the perfect student to work with. We got him signed into the program, and he graduated, last year. I had a special connection with this student because I've known him pretty much his whole life. And it's really a great example because I know as a site coordinator in Dodge City High School, I can't do it all. But working with him and relying on the outside agencies that have worked with this family since he was little, that's really how you get our kids to succeed. One person can't do it alone. So I was relying still on his big brother from Big Brothers Big Sisters and some other assistants. But so this little boy, like I said, I met him when he was in second grade, and I was taking him from an activity when he was probably fifth grade at the YMCA. I was leaving him a ride home, and we were driving through this really nice car, and he's like, when I grow up, I'm going to have a car like that. I'm like, oh, yeah? So how are you going to get it? And he's like, well, I'm going to be a drug dealer. that was his response. So, I mean, needless to say, we had a really big conversation about, that's probably not what should be your career plan. But I mean, that was yeah, fifth grade, and he had a really traumatic life. Probably a week after that conversation, his mom and one of his sisters died in a car accident. He ended up actually being placed with his big brother, the big brother's big sisters, as his guardian, because there was no one else to take him. And he struggled with grades, he struggled with behavior, there was a lot of things that he had to deal with. High school was challenging. We fought a lot, we struggled a lot, getting him to do what he needed to do, but he worked hard, his last year, he, graduated. We were concerned at the end whether he was going to graduate, but we got him through. The last week, we were still staying after school to do work, homework to get tested in, so people actually walked the stage. But he did, and he joined the Marines. And that has been, really one of my favorite stories, just seeing this child, every obstacle that he had to overcome, in order to be with USAD. And he came in over the summer, he came to see me, he came back to the high school in his uniform, and just the way he was standing, the way he carried himself, he was still that sweet little boy who's honorary and has a great sense of humor, but just the maturity level and the way he grew. And I brought up that incident about him becoming a drug dealer when he grew up, and he laughed and he's like, you know, I could have done it. That could have been very well me. Like, you could tell me that I needed to get out of our city, and if I hadn't, I probably would be in jail or dead right now. So I can't take all the credit for his success. He worked really, really hard. Like I said, big brothers, big sisters helped him a lot. The people in the community, his teachers, and we all worked together because people see the potential that he had. I think he was, for the longest time, the only one that could not see that potential. And that is my biggest, what I, every day when I show up to work, is just, if I can just help one student see the potential that they have, maybe then one team one day will be walking back to my office, proud and successful the way he is.
Oh my gosh, I love that. That makes me so happy, because, and I love how humble you're being about, you know, not taking success for all of, or not taking credit for all of his successes, which is fair, but you and I both know that you played an important role in that. And I'm so excited to hear what he does with the rest of his life, because I'm sure he'll stay in touch with you.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, he does. And that's just, he'd actually,
that's so cool.
Just not long ago, I have to send him a care packet. I know he has no one else in his life other than his big brother. And so the fact that he came back to see me when he had a week or 2 weeks to come home to, I mean, that really made me a little proud. I'm not going to lie. Yeah. He's a good kid.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. I love that. Oh, that's so exciting. I kind of want to get in on that care package. Like, if you let me know, like, let me know after the podcast, and I'll send you some money or something so you can put like some extra treats in it or something for him.
Oh, that would be awesome.
Is he stationed somewhere? Or is he still in boot camp?
Yeah, no, he graduated. He is now stationed in Japan. That is like the perfect place for him because he was all into anime and, you know, all those things that I really know nothing about. But I know from his conversations that Japan is the place to be when you're into that stuff. So,
wow. So he did get out of Dodge City. He got way out.
Yes, I doubt he will ever come back other than to visit his dad, as he calls him. There's no other reason to come back to Dodge, and I want him to experience the world and what's out there beyond what we know. Our kids, they have never gotten out of this town, which is one of the reasons I work so hard on my project every year is to set up a few college visits outside of town, And while I know that maybe some of the students will not actually go to four-year university, I feel okay just by exposing them to what's out there, you know, in the big city of Wichita.
Right.
Yeah, that is about for me. I want to see that there's something outside of what we have.
And I think that's really important because I know that a lot of the students that we work with, they do end up becoming the first students that are taking the steps to break certain cycles within their family, whether it be a cycle of poverty or a cycle of not reaching out and getting higher education. And I know that having somebody who will expose you to those types of things and to just show you that this is an option and this is the path that you can take to take advantage of this option is so important.
Absolutely.
So that was just absolutely an amazing success story, and I'm very glad that you shared it. And I'm super stoked to get involved with the care package because I know a lot of people in my life who have been in the military, and whenever you're so far away from home, even if you are loving everything that you're doing, it's still nice to have something that's familiar.
Absolutely. And I don't know how many, he is from Mexico, he's originally from Mexico, so I really don't know how many spicy candy or, you know, whatever he can find in Japan. I'm sure he likes, you know, something that reminds him of home. And,
yes.
You know, especially with his mom being gone, I think.
Yeah.
I think that will brighten his day a little bit.
Well, and I live here in Emporia, and we have a pretty large Hispanic population as well. So I've got access to a lot of candy that I think he might be really into. So I'll send you.
Perfect.
Some.
That sounds awesome.
So one of the things that I wanted to ask you about, because you do have like more than 10 years of experience working in the nonprofit field, even though your answer might not pertain to that, I'm still kind of curious if it does. What would be one of the moments in your life that you are most proud of?
Well, that's a tough question, Victoria. But I, you know, probably it's not maybe a big thing for somebody else, but I have a teenage daughter, and it can be a little difficult. You know, sometimes they don't really like their moms.
That is
but,
true.
It is really nice, when she walks into my office, she's in high school now, and she can see me interact with the other students, in the program, and, they know who she is, they are around when, she's in trouble with, classes, and she's not doing what she's supposed to, and I'm on her, and the way they look at me, and the way she looks at them and me, and, you know, just it's really nice for me to see a little bit of pride in her eyes. She won't ever open up. She will never tell me that she's proud of me. But you know, just the fact that she sees that somebody else thinks I'm kind of cool, maybe. She will never tell me that. But it is nice. I am very proud, actually, about the fact that I've had really amazing people through the different agencies that I've worked with throughout the years that have trusted me with the job that I've done. You know, I'm still going to school, and I do think that when I walk on that stage and get my degree, that probably will be one of my biggest moments, proudest moments in life. But just the fact that that people trust me with this kind of work while I'm still going to school. It's really one, it's always a reason to be proud of myself. And that kind of is what drives me to tell my students that they can do anything they set out to do in life, because I have been there where life and different struggles has prevented me from going the easy way. I'm very proud of how much I've had been able to do without having the proper credentials I guess to do the work with you.
I think that's so important, because I know that I've been told recently in the past couple of weeks, from a couple different conversations that I've had with assorted people, that it's really important to share your backstory, because whenever people meet you, they just see who you are now, and they may make assumptions of how you got to where you are now. And they may assume that you got there the quote unquote easy way, that you didn't have hardships, that you overcame yourself. And I think it's really important to share with people the truth about the path that you took to get to be where you are today. And I think that the more people are real with each other, the more we sort of break down these stigmas that surround, you know, dealing with the challenges of poverty or mental health challenges or incarceration, et cetera, et cetera. Like, there's so many things that people feel like they need to hide, when the truth is that these are the things that help us grow and become stronger, better, more well-rounded, more understanding humans.
Yes.
So I love that you share your story. And I know that you're working at the high school that you graduated from, correct?
I am, yes. Yes, a lot of the teachers, Ms. Weiss, our principal, she's my principal.
Yeah,
I have to readjust myself from being a co-worker, I still see her as my principal. And it can be intimidating. it's actually a different building. I graduated, I was the last generation to graduate from the old building. So this is an amazing building that we have here. But it is really a lot of the teachers, a lot of the staff, are still the same from when I was in high school.
I love that. Well, we are going to move into the second portion of the episode. But before we do that, is there anything else that you wanted to share about the path that you took to join Communities and Schools?
I think it really has been a great journey. I feel like in this position, I have been able to do a little bit of everything that I have done in the past. I think the flexibility that we have and to the services that we provide our kids and how we can tailor it to their needs, not a set of standards that somebody wants us to implement in school, but really tailoring the services that the students actually need in the specific communities that we serve, have really allowed me to bring a little bit of everything that I've done in my background to better the lives, the academic, it's an amazing job. I love my job.
I agree wholeheartedly. Okay, well then we are going to take a quick break, and then we will be back with a second serving of Letters from the Lunchroom. Stay tuned.
For many kids, just showing up to school is a challenge. Staying through graduation is even harder. So at Communities and Schools, we do just what our name says. Our staff brings a community of resources to meet each student's needs right in their school, doing whatever it takes to keep kids focused so they see what we see, a bright future. Join in at communitiesandschools.org.
So welcome back. As part of our show, we ask each guest to write a letter to the students that Communities and Schools serves. The only guideline they are given is that it must come from the heart. We also do warn them that they will be asked to read their letter aloud during the podcast. Blanca, are you ready to read your letter?
Yes, I am. Dear students, your grades are important to me. They are important for your future. But while you're trying to figure out how we can get an FDB, your grade is not what I'm thinking about. To me, you're way more important than your grades or the referrals that you get in here. Even though high school is your whole world right now, high school isn't everything. It's a necessary stage in your life to help you develop. It's a stepping stone, but it's not everything. In fact, school isn't even one of your greatest challenges. Life is. You know, that life that is going to pull you more purpose than the drama walking down the hallways in our school. There are more important issues that are waiting for you. There's even in life beyond the tears, the breakups, and the parties that you attend this week. I promise that while high school is a big part of your life, you will soon look back and realize that everything you went through is just a life lesson, one that you will overcome. I worry about you quitting. I worry about you showing up all of you feel like it, or being only physically present. I worry about the excuses you make, the lack of effort, and sometimes the disinterest of each other, because you're setting yourself up for failure in life beyond high school. But then I remember that you will be okay, because you're strong, because you're putting it here in school despite the many struggles that you already faced. I want you to know that I'm here when you feel like giving up, when you feel that things are getting harder. By seeing you overcome your struggles, you are also teaching me to overcome mine. I believe in you, despite the setbacks. I'm honoring you as I'm honoring my own children, because I know that you're capable of everything and anything that you set your mind. Don't ever forget, I'm here now, and I will be here for you, even after you graduate.
Very nice. So, did you find it difficult to write the letter?
Not really. I mean, there were parts of it. Like I was telling you earlier, I really want my students to know that I don't treat them differently, but I treat my own daughter. They have seen that interaction, and I actually, I think it has played in my favor, the way that they see me, and how I'm always on my daughter for doing stuff, and how I don't let her, just get away with everything. They do see that they have their teachers and they have the administrators in the school that are on them about doing this and doing that. And I don't want to be one more person that it's nagging on them all the time. But they know my expectations and they know that the help is here. To me, it's important that they see that I'm not lowering my expectations. Because they're not taking AP classes, that to me, even the preparatory classes, they have to do the best they can for them. Not to please me, not to please anybody else, but because they're capable. And by treating them the way I treat my kids and speaking to them, they're a matter of fact. They really respect me for that, I think. I don't sugarcoat anything for them. I think that's not what they need at this age. Maybe when they're younger, that will benefit them. But right now, they really want to be treated as young adults. By telling them things how they are, I notice that they really respect me more for that. And they respond better to me.
Yeah.
Just because of the way I'm used to talking to them. Like I said, a lot of them I know from my previous years, and they bring their friends and they see the interaction when they become students. They're used to me being very honest with them. And I tell them, I don't care if I'm going to get mad at you, I expect the same honesty from them. We just have a great relationship in that sense. Sometimes I don't want to hear what they have to say, but I actually appreciate that they are being honest with me, even when it's not the perfect scenario.
Mm-hmm. So whenever you read that letter aloud on the air, what is it that it made you feel?
I get very emotional when I talk about it. One of the things that I think in the schools, the education system, we focus so much on grades. We focus on making sure that they have passing grades, that they don't whatever score in the state testing. And, you know, to me, all of that is important. And we still have to watch students so that they can be successful academically. Mm-hmm. Their struggles are so much harder than that. You know, I don't know sometimes if I was going through some of the struggles that they're going through, if I will be successful in school. You know, just I'm just proud of them for making it to school. Just for being here, sometimes that's enough for me, to celebrate their achievement. They might be failing every class, but they're still in school. When, you know, a lot of them don't have anyone to hold them accountable for that at home, they're still making the effort to be here. They have, they're taking care of their siblings, their mom or dad is going through horrible illnesses, and we're asking them to get good grades, when in fact they're just surviving. And that's what I have to remind myself every day, is I am no one to judge them or to get mad at them for what they're not doing in school. I'm here to celebrate the little bit that they are doing. Because a lot of them don't really have to be here anymore. They can quit and nobody's going to say anything about it. But the fact that they're here is, to me, an indication that they wanna be here. They just don't know how to survive the now. They need someone to just hold their hand and tell them it's fine, you got this. Even if they can barely pass geometry, they will be okay on it. Because that's not really what their focus is right now. And they might need geometry to graduate, but they need to learn some of those resilience skills they're learning by being in school every day.
Yeah. And I know that as I listen to you, and I think about the past that you've shared with me, that it's so clear that you play this strong role as an advocate for our students now, advocating for the support that they need beyond what you can provide, advocating for understanding from other teachers who maybe aren't aware of the story that they've shared, that the students have shared with you, and advocating for the students themselves who maybe don't believe in themselves yet, to know that, you know, you've got their back and you'll do whatever it takes to help them succeed. And I just want you to know that's coming across loud and clear as I listen to you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, and it's really cool because I know that you've been a site coordinator for a while, and I know I've heard nothing but great things about the work that you do, but I don't work with you directly, so I've never seen it firsthand. So to hear you talk about the way that you help your students and the passion that you have for them, it just makes me so proud, which I'm constantly getting, you know, these little bursts of pride from working with this agency. But the more and more that I learn about my coworkers and the paths that they took to join this really cool nonprofit that we work for, where we are in schools every day changing these students' lives, it's just really amazing. So I'm so proud to work alongside you and other great site coordinators who are doing this hard work every single day and sharing the knowledge and experience that you have with these kids to help them go on and be their best selves. Because, you know, their lives would be very different if you didn't.
Yeah. It's an amazing place to work, really.
Yes, true. So one more question, and then we are going to take another quick break before we do our last segment of the podcast. What advice would you give to your younger self?
That's a great question. I look back at my high school years, and I was really in a very similar position than a lot of my students. Language was a barrier for me, I didn't reach out to anyone. I had so many questions about my future, and I wanted to do great things, and I didn't know how to get there. If I could go back and talk to my younger self, it would be out to not be embarrassed and reach out. But there are people out there that are willing to help, that are willing to guide you. That will be the biggest thing. I will find out some help to help me achieve the dreams and get what I needed to be a little sooner, maybe.
Excellent. Okay, well, we are going to take another quick break, and then we will be back for those extra credit questions. And we are back. Okay, Blanca, are you ready for some extra credit questions?
Yes, I am.
Perfect. Okay, the first one is, what is your favorite thing about working for communities and schools?
Oh, my favorite thing? I get to do a lot of fun activities with my students. We have a lot of fun just getting creative with the things we do. The flexibility that I have into the projects, the events that I put out, it's really fun. That is probably my favorite part.
Okay. And so then on the flip side, what is your least favorite thing about working for communities and schools?
Ah, that's an even easier question to answer. Well, I will say that funding. Mm-hmm. Yes, just the few restrictions that we have into serving the students come from the lack of funding. Mm-hmm. You know, we are actually very blessed to have the funds that we do to provide great services. But there's so many awesome things that I will love to do that I know the site coordinators that I talk to all the time, they have amazing ideas to help their students, and we don't always have the capability of doing it. It would be nice if someone just gave us, $1 million to just invest in their students.
Wouldn't that be lovely?
Yeah.
Okay, so final extra credit question. If you had a superpower, what would it be?
I don't know, travel through time maybe, or some kind of time and or time stuff power. I would like that.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So what would you do if you had a time traveling superpower?
I would probably go back and tweak a little some of the decisions that I've made through my life. I think that will be probably one of the things that I will do.
So if you could go back and change one thing, what would you do?
Well, there are a lot of things that I would change. One of the things that I think about often, but I will probably have said a few more things to my dad before he passed away. I would just make that little 5-10 minutes a little longer, and give him a hug. I would like to remember the last few words that I told him, so I will go back. Into something less emotional. I will have gone back probably listen to my parents a little more on when I was in high school on the things that I needed to do.
Well, and I think that, not to bring the emotion back into it, but I think there's a lot that we can all you know, take like a mental note from what you said you would do, and to never hesitate to really live and take advantage of telling people that you love them, showing people that you care, being kind, because nothing is ever guaranteed. And in this day, do your best.
That's right. That's right. And you know, I think that's another great thing that I always try to talk to my students about. It's not just words have such a huge power, and just be kind all the time. You never know what the other person's going through, and sometimes we overreact about some situations, and you know, we can just be a little more understanding. Happy.
Indeed. Well, I want to thank you so much, Blanca, for sharing your story with us and talking with me today. It was really amazing hearing about the journey that you took that ended up connecting you with communities and schools and bringing you eventually onto the podcast. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, and I really enjoyed this time. I can't say that I enjoy a podcast. I did not think so. Thank you so much.
Awesome. So that is it for today's episode of Letters from the Lunchroom. For more information on Communities and Schools of Mid-America, including how to help us with funding, please check out our website at cismidamerica.org. Make sure to subscribe to this podcast and follow us on social media at cismidamerica. I hope you've all enjoyed this episode of Letters from the Lunchroom. I'm your host, Victoria Partridge, and until next time, class is dismissed.